a production of South Dakota Public.
I'm Dave Knutson, the Senate Majority Leader, and I have typically used these press conferences in part to review what's happened in the legislature in the past week. This week included on Tuesday what is referred to as crossover day. That's a day in which all bills that started in the Senate need to either have passed the Senate or they're treated as having been killed in the Senate. And the same is true for the House. So this last week, I think both the Majority Leader Fain and I have been primarily concerned with bills that originated in our own body. And in the Senate, we had a number of bills, I think, of fairly big significance. One was Senate Bill 186, which around which a broad consensus has emerged. But this is a bill to change our unemployment insurance laws to increase over a five-year period the wage base, increase the pay-in rate, and also change the mechanism by which we have something called a surcharge. When the unemployment fund goes below a certain level, there is a surcharge, which in the fourth quarter of 2009 was $150 a full-time worker, and basically hit the retail industry exceptionally hard, because if you had already paid $10,000 in calendar year 2009 to a worker, you were exempt from this surcharge. And that was viewed widely as an unfair mechanism for imposing the surcharge, so there's some reforms there. The bill, I think, originally people weren't convinced it was exactly the right solution, but now it has basically come to the point where there is virtually no opposition to this important fix. The other bill of real significance, I think, that we dealt with in the Senate is Senate Bill 195. This related to the refunds we give to large projects. Right now in South Dakota, we have a provision that says we give back a certain percentage of the contractor's excise tax and the sales tax on materials for projects that are over $4.5 million in size for agricultural projects, in which case we give 100% of those taxes back to other projects of unlimited size. And on the non-ag side, it depends on the bigger the project, the larger you receive. But if you're more than $500 million, you get 90% of your taxes back. Well, this has been viewed as a pretty inefficient way of doing economic development in South Dakota. It's a program that I think we have given back in excess of $50 million of tax dollars to companies that are building or have built large projects. And in many cases, the people have concerns, and including, or perhaps especially myself, whether our tax incentive is very important to those. Pipelines has been a particular area of controversy. Again, I certainly fall in the camp. It's very hard for me to believe when you have to get a pipeline from point A to point B that tax incentives of the state in which you are running your pipeline is very important. Also on these huge projects that involve several hundred million dollars or $1 billion in costs, I believe that regulatory climate and the permitting process are more important than a state's tax rebate program or tax giveaways, tax incentives. So Senate Bill 195, which was sponsored by the Republican leadership in the legislature, tried to reform this system. First of all, kept the program and simplified the program, improved the program for projects between $10 and $40 million. That is the economic development sweet spot for South Dakota. Whether you're talking about Aberdeen or Watertown or Woonsocket or Rapid City and Sioux Falls, It is the, you know, these are the types of projects that our local communities see, work hard to develop in their communities. These are the types of projects that typically are fairly substantial in terms of employment, and they are almost always in that range. That's a genuine plant, whether it's making something or providing a particular business service. These are the kinds of expansions that have jobs attached to them and are very important to our local communities. And Senate Bill 195 preserves that that sweet spot going forward, simplifies it, and improves it. For the projects over $40 million, we provide in our bill a two-year step down for projects between $40 million and $500 million in cost. And that is a very carefully crafted range. As far as I am aware, that picks up every single project that is on the drawing boards for South Dakota, with exception of the Western pipeline. But, you know, there's a number of wind energy projects that are out there, a number of electric generation projects. As far as I am aware, every project would be picked up in that $40 to $500 million range that is on the drawing boards in South Dakota. So we tried to be fair to those projects that are well into their planning process. And we provide for a 50% rebate during fiscal year 2011 and a 25% rebate in fiscal 2012. And this step down, I think, by and large, industry is supportive of a phase out of the program on the theory that the next governor and the 2011 legislature will probably want to recraft this program. I think one of the important pieces in the Senate Bill 195 that differs from the governor's bill, which is House Bill 1060, is that in our bill, we focus on costs paid and incurred. So we don't have just a start date. When did you start construction? And that's that sort of grandfathers you under the rules that were in place at the moment you started your project. And that would apply, those old rules would apply for however long the project life is. Our bill looks at costs paid and incurred. So whatever you pay in fiscal year 2010 will be governed by the existing rules. Whatever you pay in fiscal 11 would be governed by the rules in place for fiscal 11 and so on for fiscal 12. I think that eliminates the potential abuse, which I believe is high, that somehow I'm going to get my project started and claim that I'm still under the old 90% rules. The last issue is whether to include pipelines in the list of allowable projects. We already exclude projects that relate to retail sales, projects that relate to healthcare services, projects that are owned by non-taxable, non-profit entities, and there's one other one which I'm blanking on at the moment, but we've always had residential projects. And so we've always had a tradition of excluding certain types of projects from qualification under the rebate refund program. And to me, pipelines is an example where they're coming to South Dakota based on geography, not on our tax incentives. I don't think we get any bang back for our buck. As we look at the Western pipeline, this could be a $25 to $35 million issue, as I understand it. So I think that pipeline or the big project refunds will be an issue that the House will have to wrestle with in the next couple of weeks. I personally think 195 was sent over in pretty good shape, but I know that there's going to be continued discussion on that topic over on the House side. In sort of a companion piece, Senate Bill 161 received only 11 negative votes in the Senate, less than one-third, but one of our members was gone, so Senate Bill 161, which would have imposed a 2 cent per barrel environmental fee on crude oil pipelines failed, but it did receive just one vote short of two-thirds in the Senate, showing, I think, a little bit the sentiment over on the Senate side with regard to pipeline-type projects. Two other bills I would mention. One is Senate Bill 65, which extended the life of South Dakota's license plates for another 5 years. This will generate $4 million for local roads simply by avoiding the costs associated with recycling our license plates every 5 years. Instead, it goes to a 10-year format. This is money that is desperately needed by our local communities to help in their roads. It's a bill that, again, is over now on the House side, but I think is in pretty good shape and is an important bill, I think, to at least do something to deal with our road situation, which is very serious. We are having trouble maintaining our roads. The last bill I would talk about is Senate Bill 104, which is a open government bill that Representative Fain and I have served as the prime sponsors. The bill makes a number of relatively modest changes to our open meetings laws, but all of which are positive steps forward. It provides a mechanism for the distribution to the distribution via internet, make available to the public for inspection board information packets. It provides for open meetings for various committees and task forces to the extent they are making final decisions. It provides that if you have a task force or committee, subcommittee that is merely making recommendations to a governing body, those recommendations need to be given in an open meeting on day one, and then action on those can't be taken until the next meeting of the governing board or governing body, so that the public will in fact have an opportunity to react to and express their thoughts on recommendations coming out of any committee or task force process that wasn't open to the public. The bill also provides for posting of draft minutes within 10 business days of a meeting. I think in all cases these particular provisions were designed to prevent or react to what were seen as pretty serious abuses. In one city in South Dakota, the Park Board, which apparently has power in that city to enter into contracts, refused to let the public into their meetings. And again, I think there were some clearly abusive cases which 104 is designed to respond to, and I think it is a small but important step to follow on the very major step we made last year in opening up state government and local government in South Dakota with our presumption of openness. I think 104 continues that down that path of opening up government. I think it's an important bill, albeit making a small step, but in an important direction. So that would be kind of the major look at on the Senate side. After Representative Fain talks about the House side, I want to come back with a few comments on the budget.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. I guess the most urgent news, or the most activity that took place on the House floor this week, dealt with, as Senator Knutson outlined, crossover day. The House dealt with nearly 50 bills on the floor between Monday and Tuesday to achieve crossover day. We were proud that we finished crossover day before the Senate did. I made sure as soon as we were finished, I paraded over to the Senate floor to brag about that a little bit, but we were able to finish our calendar and start dealing with Senate bills this week. Some of the more notable bills that we dealt with this week. We did pass a bill by a fairly narrow margin, 40-29, that would change the calculation of the small school factor in cases of open enrollment in high schools. Basically, what the bill does says that if you open enroll from one school to another, the state pays the per student allocation the lower of the two. For example, we'll give an example right here close to the state capitol. The way existing law works is if someone would choose that was in the peer school district and decided to open enroll to Stanley County, which is in Fort Pierre. I believe the high schools are slightly over, just barely 2 miles apart, I believe, in Pierre. Should the peer student go to Stanley County, it would cost the state government or the local taxpayers combination of about $500 more for that year for the student. And this bill basically says you're certainly welcome to open enroll. You can go to a larger school if you want or a smaller school if you want. However, the amount that the state aid to education would cover would be the lower of the two. I don't know that there was any abuse of that out there, but it seemed that that was maybe an unintended consequence of the open enrollment laws that were passed several years ago, that it actually was costing government more because of the open enrollment laws. So this bill attempts to stabilize that. We also, I guess I was pleasantly surprised by the margin in which House Bill 1018 came out of the House on Tuesday. House Bill 1018 basically extends unemployment insurance benefits for an additional 6 months if the unemployed person is enrolled in a post-secondary school in South Dakota, either in a four-year university or a tech school. That expansion in benefits in South Dakota is being funded by additional money from the federal government. South Dakota, should this bill pass, would receive an additional $11.7 million, I believe, from the federal government, which in essence would pay for this program for about 9 years. I think the sentiment in the House there was the fact that unemployment is at a, if not record, near record high, and as long as this benefit is available, we felt that rather than just having unemployed people in South Dakota, we'd rather have unemployed students. So this would extend their benefits by another 6 months should that bill pass the Senate and be signed by the governor. But overall, the biggest amount of time that has been spent in the House has been similar to the Senate in trying to work towards our budget goals that we announced early in the session. We still fully intend to try and find a way to balance the FY11 budget without using the $32 million in reserve funds that the governor had proposed in his budget address. We're working every day to try and achieve that goal, and I, again, as I've done before, I want to thank Senator Knutson and the Senate for their cooperative efforts on this. The Senate and House Republicans are working extremely well together to try and find a solution to this budget problem, and I'm still optimistic that we can get that done. We'll be working with the Senate again on a few other projects. As Senator Knutson commented on, we probably the most contentious is shaping up to be the large project issue, the tax refund on large projects. I see some differences between the two bodies in that. We're also going to need to come to consensus on a couple issues that we aren't probably as far apart on, K-12 funding and the opportunity scholarship funding. Still a couple issues that we need to resolve between the bodies, but I'm confident that we can achieve that soon. I guess the most difficult issue we dealt with in the House this week, probably this year so far, had to do with funding of the Sanford Underground Mine. House Bill 1083 was killed on the House floor not only once but twice last week. It lost on a party line vote on, Friday last week. It was defeated on a party line vote. The bill was then reconsidered and lost again on Wednesday. In essence, what the bill was designed to do was subsidize the monies available to the Sanford Underground Mine to keep it open for six more months when this budget year was finished. The National Science Foundation has monies appropriated. The money is appropriated. It's a matter of going through the process to get the money to South Dakota to keep the Sanford mine moving forward, but there is a six-month gap that needs to be funded to the tune of about $5.4 million. The governor's office and the Bureau of Finance and Management had identified, was it four or five funds? I believe it was five different funds that basically it was one-time money that they were going to sweep from five identified funds to put a short-term patch on the funding for the Sanford mine. The bill was killed twice in the House on a party line vote, Republicans all voting for the bill, and however, it was an appropriations bill, so it needed a two-thirds majority, which can only be achieved in the House with a bipartisan vote. We unfortunately could not get any support from the Democrat caucus on funding the underground mine, so that bill to keep the mine open and operating was killed. It's a it's disturbed me a lot, and I think of I will I'll be a little more calm this time than I've been speaking about that in the past, because it really upset me that this has never been a political issue. I remember one of the highlights of my political career here in Pierre was when we were called into special session to appropriate the money for the beginning of the Sanford Underground Mine. I believe of 105 legislators, there were only two no votes that day. And I remember leaving the Capitol thinking, that is the vote of all votes that I will take in this building that will make a tremendous difference in the future of South Dakota. The Sanford Underground Lab, or the DUSL as it's commonly referred to, has never before been a political issue, and it really troubles me that it became one this year. It was purely political, party-line vote, and just simply under the argument that let's use different funds. They wanted to find a different fund to fund the lab and move these one-time monies into, as it was stated on the House floor, into things like education and state employee salaries. Using one-time funds out of reserves runs directly into the face of solving our budget deficit. Using one-time monies for ongoing expenses is like taking money out of your savings account to make your car payment. The savings account is gone, the car payment keeps on coming, and that's what was proposed on the House floor to do with the one-time money that was identified for a one-time project in keeping the doors open at Sanford. I'm really disappointed that probably the largest economic development project in South Dakota for many decades has been turned into a political issue. We prioritize every dollar that we spend in our budget. You could make the argument out of every line item in our budget that that's not the right funding source or this isn't the right funding source. You can do that with every dollar we spend. Why did we pick this one? It sends a terrible message to the National Science Foundation and the federal government. To this point, South Dakota has been totally arm in arm across political parties and across the east and western half of South Dakota in support of this project. I'm terribly disappointed that it has now become a political football, and I hope that another effort will be made to find a solution to this problem. So with that, I know Senator Knutson has a couple other comments.
Well, again, just that we are continuing to work on the budget issue, as Representative Fain said. Again, it's a slow process, but in order to do it off of knowledge, we really needed to get through the appropriations process, let them see all of the departments of state government. And so, again, I think we're continuing to look at various ideas, asking our Appropriations Committee members to follow up on certain ideas and continue to have a strong commitment to getting to a budget that does not spend any of the reserves. I think we'd be glad to try and open up for questions. Chad?
How soon will you have a budget plan that you can talk about publicly?
If I knew the last day, I would say prior to March, whatever it is. I would guess, whether it would be something next week or early the following week. I think it is going to be, because of the size of this, again, Representative Fain mentioned the $32 million, but it really ballooned up to $40 million by the legislature's refusal to shift things onto the local property taxpayer. So it's a $40 million problem. That's about 3.5% of our total general fund budget. It is very challenging, and so it's going to be take some time.
When this process started, Governor Rounds said he didn't think he could do it. He said if it could be done, he would have proposed it. And as you're working through this process, are you finding things to cut? Are you finding is it possible and things to do? Or are you finding it as difficult as Governor Rounds suggested?
Well, I think he was of the view it was impossible. I certainly don't share that. I think we're going to get there.
Just to follow up, yesterday afternoon, it's my understanding that Republican leaders in the legislature sat down together and discussed ideas on the budget. Was there any consensus on directions that you were going to go?
Well, Representative Fain has indicated he's been gracious enough to talk about how closely we've worked together, and I think that definitely is the feeling on the Senate side, is that we've been working very closely with the House. We started this process before the legislative session. We've continued to meet on a regular basis. Budget has been one of our primary areas of focus. I think there is an emerging consensus on a variety of ideas, but nothing that is moved from the mix of ideas to a concrete proposal at this point in time.
I think it's been a good process because so often, I touched on a couple things that maybe were not lockstep in, but I think we're lockstep in our resolve to solve this problem and save the reserve funds because they're going to need them more next year than we need them this year.
Well, just to follow up on that very point, coming into session, there was discussion on finding a two-year solution. And then you and I spoke directly on that. Are you still looking at a two-year solution, or are you just focused entirely now on the current 2011 budget?
I think the focus is trying to reduce the size of state government and its expenditures on a continuing, if we can reduce continuing expenditures this year by $40 million, that's going to reduce just automatically the size of the deficit next year by that same $40 million. So I think that in my mind, the goal is to try and not utilize one-time money or certainly minimize the use of one-time money to the extent we are covering continuing expenses. You know, where there are instances where things have ballooned up on something that looks like a bubble, looks like an unusual feature, then I think perhaps using some one-time funds makes some sense. We obviously have some additional money coming back from the federal government on the so-called clawback provisions, I think our Part D of the Medicaid program, whether that should be utilized to cover some of our $50 million deficit this year or increase in Medicaid, probably makes sense.
See, we're out of time. We've indicated, so thank you, folks.